is. Bruce, there it is. Bruce, there it is. Huh? Tell me you guys didn't love that.
Oh, fucking dope. I did. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah. What's going on, everybody? Man. I'm Andrew here with Zach Bartel. How you guys doing? This is Canucks Corner, and going to quote my Irish girlfriend here. She just said about 5 minutes ago. This is Wednesday night recording, just after the Bruins game. Quote from my Irish girlfriend. They're back. The boys are back. The Canucks are fucking back. Direct quote.
Direct quote.
she's like, can I get a Bruce jersey?
Man. Oh, man.
Just get a t-shirt and throw some mustard stains on there.
Yeah. Boys. So this is an epic episode. We're going to scratch NHL news. Who cares? We're going to scratch fantasy news. Who cares? Let's dive right into it. Actually, before we do that, sorry. If you're not watching, get on the YouTube channel. Those of you who did it last week to see Zach in his porno, whatever. He's done it. He's
porno, a man whatever.
Of, yeah, he's a man of his word. He's at the beach right now. How you doing, Zach? We'll start with you because it looks like you're doing great.
I'm doing great. I'm really psyched. Like you said, the Canucks are back. I'm in a celebratory mood. And again, I'm nothing if not a man of my word. And last week's episode got more views than the one before that. So I'm pretty comfortable shirtless here tonight at the beach. And I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Bartel, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad, man. I wish I was at the beach like Zach there.
But, beach in Chilliwack.
Well, they are an island, so
it's true. I almost had oceanfront property.
No doubt, eh? Not too bad, not too bad.
Nice to see you, boys. We're a little bit late on this one. We had some issues with me moving and stuff, which has been absolutely hectic. Like I said, buying stuff off Marketplace, so we're all over the show. Went to Tawson today after work, got back like half an hour ago. But I have a coffee table now, so.
There you go.
All right. Well, let's go. First thoughts, boys. What? I don't even know where to start. So, I mean, let's start with the dismissal of Green and Benning, which happened on your birthday, if I'm not mistaken. That
it did. Yeah, Sunday. Yeah. Happy 32nd to me.
Yeah. Was that a good present? Were you happy with that?
I was, I'm still kind of confused at what exactly the plan is moving forward, only because, you know, they canned Benning and Green, but then hired a coach immediately. And yet they're still talking about searching for a GM. I mean, I know it's not unheard of to have a coach in place for a GM to kind of inherit, but I don't know. It still seems a little bit weird to me. I'm hoping that, you know, everything's good that way. And, you know, obviously first impressions with Bruce and the effect that he's had on the team are great, but it is, it just seems a little bit ass backwards to me. And, sorry, we're watching the language today after a comment we got on YouTube's, but, but anyway, no, I think, I'm happy. Obviously the results speak for themselves, 2 wins in a row. One against a pretty tired and depleted LA Kings team, but the other one, you know, tonight up against the Bruins. And I'm stoked for the results. I'm stoked for the coaching change. It just felt a little bit funny to me for them to, you know, fire them both and then immediately hire a coach and then still be searching for a GM.
Bartel, do you have any thoughts? I can comment on that, but I want to hear your thoughts first. Yeah. So, I think now what I've heard is that the Canucks were trying to beat Philadelphia to the punch, essentially, right? Because they were firing Vigneault, and the word got out. They knew it was going to happen, so they pulled the trigger and snapped up all Brucey. So I think that's what they wanted. I think Smeal was a big fan. I think he influenced that decision a lot. And then, of course, the Aquilinis made the deal. I mean, because they had to, probably Francesco. Which, by the way, did you guys listen to that that briefing?
The press conference he had?
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one since, I think, 8 years, since Benny got hired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that.
I mean, I know we say that, but like, and I know the media is all over wanting to hear from the Aquilinis more, but I don't know. Do we really have to? I don't know if we have to. This is not the NFL. It's not the Dallas Cowboys, right? Like,
yeah, but I mean, once every 8 years, you'd like to hear from them. You know what I mean? It's nice to hear a little bit of feedback and see where they're at least. You know what I mean? And especially when your whole crowd base was, you know, basically wanting a change and wanting to hear from the Aquilinis, right? Then silence is kind of, I don't think it's a good thing.
Well, there wasn't silence. He stepped up, I guess, which is good. There, we thought there might have been silence. Like, I was a bit shocked that he actually spoke.
I think it had to do with the jersey. I honestly do. I think it had to do. And then, you know, directly after that, the chanting. It was just the Canucks were not in a good place.
You know, it's funny because I tend to agree with you that jersey was a lot more significant than, you know, we may think it is. I think that seeing that jersey thrown on the ice, kind of that last desperation and just showing the frustration from the fan base, I do think that got to the Aquilinis. And I think that might have been kind of the straw that broke the camel's back in this case. Because, immediately after the trigger was pulled, everybody knew the fan base was upset heading into that. But then to see that jersey on the ice was kind of symbolic of the frustrations that everybody's been feeling. And, you know, I mean, it just seems to be a Canadian thing to do, right? If you want to try to kickstart your team, then you throw a jersey on the ice. And I don't know. I mean, it's funny because there's a lot of like Canucks fan base pages on Facebook and on social media, and people are like claiming to be the guy who threw the jersey on the ice. it's like a point of pride right now. Like, I was the catalyst type thing. Right. So it's, yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it too. And it was interesting to hear from him. I didn't hear the whole comments. I just saw actually it in print. A few of the things about him saying maybe they were too patient with Benning, which I thought was,
he owned up to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty telling. I mean, I don't know. And again, like we had talked about in the last two episodes, I think, referencing back to that meeting that he had with Benning, and, you know, it kind of seemed like they were in lockstep together. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, realized that things weren't changing, weren't getting turned around, and that was it, cut the cord. So I'm happy with it. Obviously, I think that the management group that we have going right now is a little bit confusing, maybe. I mean, it's a lot of voices right in a room, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's not a traditional scheme anyway. And so we'll see how that goes and the search for the GM. But you know, it sounds like Stan Smeal in particular was really kind of taking this seriously. Like, I got that kind of competitive feeling from him, like that he really takes ownership of this team. So I mean, I'm happy with it. I'm interested to see where they're going to go in this search for a GM. But I mean, overall, the results speak for themselves so far, two games in, and it's tough to really critique anything at this point.
Yeah. Steve?
I think it's weird that, I think it's rare. I don't know if it's happened before. If it has happened, it's really rare that the GM and the coach get fired within, 24 hours at the same time, right? Are you saying bringing in Boudreaux? I think Boudreaux is a huge pickup for the Canucks in the sense of this is what he does well. If you look back to it, what did he do with Washington? Right, he gone right before he leaves, they win the cup. Did the same thing in Anaheim. Got the team right to where they need to go, leaves, next coach comes in, takes them to the cup. He was doing it the Wild. I don't know why he got fired from the Wild. He wasn't having a bad record. The team seems to be working with him. I don't know. I really like the guy. I like his antics. I know they were talking about they're interviewing him after the Bruce There It Is thing. And he said, well, if I don't win the next one, I'd be there, Bruce, there he goes. So
yeah.
I thought that was pretty good, right? So
that's pretty quick.
He's got a great sense of humor.
Great sense of humor. He seems to bring it in, and obviously the guys reacted to it, right?
He's a player's coach, man. And I've been I've got the excitement back in myself again. I think the players do too, watching the last two games. Like even Zach, even like talking when we spoke at the beginning of the season, you and I especially were hyped up like, oh, this is going to be so, I mean, Steve was too, but I mean, Steve had a little bit more doubts that turned out to be true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Zach and I were like, fuck you, Steve.
Yeah.
Oh, of sorry. You were. Sorry. Fuck you, Steve. Sorry.
No swearing. Yeah,
no swearing. No swearing. Yeah, no, it was so, anyways, I got that excitement in me again. And I was like watching all the post conference interviews and stuff like that. And like, these guys look, they look happier.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. they look, and I, no, that's not to slight Green. I don't think, I know, I don't know, but it, I don't think it's, has so much to do with Green. I think it just has to do with the change.
Maybe
like a fresh start.
I don't know. I think Green's a little bit more of a
much of a hard a ass.
Tough. No, I would say hard ass, more of a tough coach, and that complete change of who it is. You know what I mean? Like new face, a whole nother way of thinking. Maybe it's more of their style of play. All those are factors that come into it, right? And especially if you're a player playing in a system that you don't feel like you fit well in, and then all of a sudden you kind of get opened up. What was it? I mean, PD was killing penalties, right? So it just gives these guys maybe a little bit of energy and confidence boost, right? So he's a huge pickup.
Yeah, I do think both of you made really good points as far as coaching styles too, because I think that Bruce Boudreau definitely is more of a player's coach. I mean, which is funny because I don't know how old he is. He's got to be in his 60s,
like 66. late 60s.
Yeah. So like I wouldn't immediately equate like a late 60s head coach in the NHL with a player's coach myself, mm-hmm. but you know, you can see it in the way that Bruce carries himself and just the, you know, post gamers and, you know, seeing it even in practice. There was a lot of tape from practice yesterday that got, you know, released on Canucks Twitter and everything. It seemed pretty competitive, seemed pretty upbeat. And to me, like the biggest kind of point was Brock Besser's post-game interview after the LA Kings game, and where he was just basically saying that Bruce, you know, told him like, let it go, like rifle those shots off, don't worry about passing, like get those pucks on net again. And you know, that's what Besser does best, and that's, you know, hopefully what he kind of gets back to is actually unloading that shot a little bit more. And just playing with a bit more confidence. Like, and I think that's going to be huge going forward. I mean, and again, with Green, like I liked Green too. I really did. Like, I hope that he gets another job, another shot someday in the NHL, but maybe he just didn't gel with the team. And, you know, maybe they were kind of sewering him a little bit and trying to get him ousted. And then, you know, maybe now they will pick up their play and everything's going to be a lot better, but it definitely felt towards the end there like they had given up on him entirely, like he had lost the room or they were done with him, whatever the case may be. That's certainly the vibe that you kind of got watching them play and how lethargic they looked. Like mm-hmm. there was no pep in just about anybody's step towards the end of that tenure.
I agree. And it's like, because I don't think Travis had a different message. You know, I can remember a few post-game press conferences where, you know, someone would ask him, how do you help Brock from slumping? He's like, oh, he's got to shoot more.
Right.
You know, so the message was the same, just the person who delivered it was different. And probably the way it was delivered was different.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a key part. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No,
that's a key, go ahead. The way it was delivered, I think is a huge point that you made there. You know, telling Brock to shoot more, but putting him in a position where he isn't like to shoot. Say he likes to shoot from the top right corner, but you're placing him down in a position, you know, bottom left, and you're telling him to shoot, or the play's just not the right. And you know, Boudreau maybe style's a little bit different, which that will adapt to him, right? Like, that's I think was a huge piece, and that's where the frustration came from the players and the coach, was that, you know, they both needed to know that, like, Brock needed to shoot the puck, but you need to put him in a better position to shoot that puck. All right.
Yeah. You're going to start to see Vancouver's power play look identical to Washington's with Besser set up in Ovi's kitchen there right at the top of the faceoff circle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got Petey there too. Yeah. Rifle him too, right? Like we have a team full of them.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that can't be overstated either, is the fact that, you know, Bruce does carry that pedigree of playing with extremely skilled and talented offensive players, dynamic young players, young too. Guys too. Yeah, he did have Ovi Young. And, you know, maybe that could go a long way. I don't think that Boudreau is known for his, you know, kind of defensive play on the defensive side of the puck. But, you know, whatever, like if he can start unlocking these guys' potentials, getting them to really rifle it on net, I mean,
that's ultimately been the Canucks' Achilles heel so far this year, ironically, is scoring goals. When you look at the lineup, and they should be able to be putting 3.5 to 3.8 goals away a game easily. And so hopefully this is kind of that turning point. I do think it is. And I mean, Demko, talk about, like, I didn't see all of the LA game, but tonight against Boston, like, I was kind of glancing in and out dealing with the kids, but man, like, he was looking solid. Like, I mean, well, what can you say? Like a shutout and then an overtime shootout win. So one goal against between two games with over 120 minutes played. So it's pretty incredible what he's doing. Yeah. And if you've got a guy like that backstopping your team, you know, you can afford to play a little bit looser in the defensive end as well. He's going to clean up a lot of those chances. So I really like the direction that the Canucks team is going in. And again, I'm trying to, you know, rather than the beginning of the year where I was just guns a-blazing for the Canucks, I'm trying to actually temper it right now. But it's exciting. Two games into this. And like you said, Steve or Andrew, like, you know, the excitement is back.
Yeah. I also want to add that the one goal against in the last two games was a 5-on-3 power play.
So I think there's something that we're missing here that's a bigger key of what happened than we're not really talking about. And I think it's Baumgartner leaving. I really think that him being out might give Brad, what's his last name?
Shaw.
Brad Shaw.
Shaw, a little more opportunity to run his style of a defense. Not saying that our defense is bad, but, you know, having him there, But yeah, I think Baumgartner leaving is a big piece to that. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah. I mean, look, we need a lot on our back end. Now our penalty kill's gotten a bit better. Like I said, the 5-on-3 they scored today, but I think we beat LA in the special teams last game, and I think our goal, ours was a power play goal, but they scored a power play goal. And then
two for four on the power play, and then we killed two penalties against LA.
Right. And so, then tonight, I mean, 50% tonight they scored once on the power play, which was a 5-on-3.
Yeah. So, I mean, 5-on-3 is not bad.
Yeah. Our penalty kill is like worst in like NHL history. Nearly.
Yeah. It is like, historically terrible.
Yeah.
Not just Canucks, not just franchise, league bad. So yeah, and you could chalk that up to partly, you know, having injuries at the beginning of the season and whatnot, but ultimately I think there's a lot more to it. And I agree with you, Steve. I think Bomber being, and maybe just his way of thinking or his style was just not working here, and having some fresh faces and new ideas in seems to be working so far. And and a new plan of attack too. Boudreaux said he wanted guys to be more aggressive. There was, we had two two-on-ones, I think, right, and a breakaway on the penalty kill in the last two games. And Bruce said in a post-game interview that you know, the old way wasn't working. You know, sitting back and playing a conservative box just wasn't working. So it looks like, I mean, it's so early to tell, obviously, but the two games have been fun to watch, and you know, it was great. Brock even said in a post-game interview as well after LA, it gave him chills, which I was worried about. He was referring to, someone asked him about the fans cheering at the end of the game, and they got a standing ovation. It was loud in that arena after the 4-0 win in LA. And I wasn't worried about it, but I was wondering how players would react, you know, like the next game. Sure, you put up a great performance, you make the crowd go crazy, but like, someone just threw your jersey on the ice. Do you still have that bitter taste? Do you still wow, fuck you guys?
I don't think that jersey on the ice had anything to do with the play, like the players. I think everyone knew what that jersey was, who that jersey was directed to, and what it was about. So I don't think the players take that personally. I wouldn't, as a player. It wasn't directed at them. It was directed at what everyone's been talking about. But go ahead, Zach.
I agree completely. I mean, between the chants for Fire Benning, Fire Green, whatever, and I completely agree with you. And I think the other kind of important key part here is the hiring of Scott Walker coming over as an assistant coach. And I have these quotes from him here. It's going to take me, you know, about 15-30 seconds to get through these, but These are his words in an interview with Sportsnet that I think are really important from Scott Walker. So he said, quote, "This team means more to me than people know," Walker told Sportsnet on Tuesday. "I was telling Steamer the other day, I got drafted as a 19-year-old undersized defenseman back when that wasn't in vogue by Pat Quinn and George McPhee. Ronnie DeLorme was on the scouting staff with Mike Penny, and they had Steamer, Thomas Gradin, Jack McElargy, Kurt Fraser on staff. That means a lot to me. I feel like those people had a big impact on who I am in my life, not just as a player, but as a person. I feel a great deal of responsibility to them. You know what I mean? People say, yeah, but you didn't play much here, but it has nothing to do with playing. Look at these guys. I stayed in the game because of character, being a good teammate, but I learned all that from those people. I'm not trying to be arrogant, but I had turned down two other NHL teams last year and the summer before that for assistant coaching jobs. And it wasn't because I didn't like them. Just for me, where I am in my life and in my kid's life, the fit has to be perfect. Honestly, when Bruce said it was Vancouver, the feeling of getting back here was like you couldn't even imagine." So that's coming from Scott Walker as an assistant coach coming back to Vancouver, right? And so again, that's what I took from that too. Like, I thought that's pretty amazing. I mean, you don't really think of, obviously assistant coaches are going to be a lot friendlier with the players and everything. Like, they're going to be there for the players, but to hear that the city itself means that much to an assistant coach on the coaching staff is pretty cool to me. And you kind of get that feeling again, like I had talked about, like Steamer, Stan Smeal, but you know, he seemed really competitive, really serious about dealing with this. And then you've got, these words coming from Scott Walker on the new hire being the assistant coach. And I think that's pretty cool. I think that's going to inject a lot of passion into the team. You know, a guy who really does care that much. I think that's, when I saw those quotes, I found it interesting. I had to bring it up here.
Yeah, very nice. I think I also want to touch on a really important part of bringing Bruce Boudreau into the Canucks organization was the term he wanted, right? Or the term they agreed to. Because I think it was something they wanted a two-year deal. So Bruce is going to finish this year and then do one more. Mm-hmm. And then kind of see where it's at. Now, I'm bringing that up now because I imagine, I don't even know Walker's contract, but I imagine it's similar.
Yeah, I would assume.
So for me, it's kind of just like, what? Now, it's too early to be asking what happens next because I'm riding this wave now. You know what I mean? But the future is still, I don't think this is the end game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like is Bruce Boudreau the guy that takes us to the Stanley Cup? Are these players the players that take us to a Stanley Cup?
I mentioned to you earlier, I don't think Boudreau is going to take us to the Cup. I think he's going to get us to a point where we can win the Cup. And that's what I think that's what he is. He take those young guys, turn them in, but I don't know if he can take it to that next step. As for the players,
some of those young guys aren't very young anymore. You know, that's the thing.
We have a lot of young guys still, like Bukosin, Hoglander, Petey's still young, Hughes is still young. I know Horvat's, you know, mid-20s, but that's still not old. He's still in his prime, right? Even JT Miller's 28 years old, right? He still has a couple of years of good hockey. Our team isn't that far out, you know, or it's not like when the Sedins were turning 33 or 34, right? You're like, oh shit, this is the end of that, right? You know, it's all downhill. As for guys, I think the talent's there. It's just unlocking it and keeping it going. If Bruce can do that, I think maybe one or two key pickups and it can change this whole team, right? So
okay, so this is a good time to kind of transition into players because that was the next thing on my list. What are we looking at, boys? Like in my eyes, I'm seeing obviously our defense needs some help. Mm-hmm.
100%.
We'll see what happens with Brock and Petey if they can step up and start scoring goals at the caliber that we know they can, accompanied by JT Miller the way he's playing. And Garland, if he can keep playing the way he's playing, you know, it's still a decent forward group, but our defense definitely needs some work. Mm-hmm. Right. So how do you add the caliber of defender that we need without losing someone in that forward group? I don't know if it's possible.
We can by trading prospects. You know, we do have some talented prospects in the AHL are coming up that you can move with, you know, a third, maybe even a second, to try to pick someone up. Where I agree.
But doesn't that blow up our future? Because like our prospect pool is already limited. Like our draft picks are already limited.
We are limited, but I mean, if we can give up a little bit in our draft to get a top four secured defenseman or someone that could fit that to make us have a cup run, I think it's worth it, right?
I was gonna say our biggest problem is that we only have one defenseman that, you know, like players. So Petey, I feel for him a bit because he doesn't have anyone who can hit him up the middle. You know what I mean? Like when he's going, he's got one defenseman. Right, we all know who that is.
Yeah,
who's having an incredible year?
Right, he is. Yeah, he just got his 19th assist, didn't he?
Or four assists. Four assists in one game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then he's the only defenseman that can do that, right? We need a defenseman.
You think Ekman Larson can?
No, I don't think he's. I don't think he's that type of player.
You don't think he's good enough to hit PD and stride? I don't know. He's pretty offensively gifted. But you think
I think OEL can still do it too. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he has the same offensive prowess as Hughes does, obviously. But I think OEL can still do it. I mean,
sorry, can I rephrase my before you go on, Zach?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he can, but I just don't think he's the answer. Sorry, Zach.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, when it comes to OEL, like we're what, 26, 27 games into the season. Like I understand, like he's acclimated, but you know, he is coming over to a new system. He's played his entire career in Arizona. He's, you know, I still think OEL can do a lot more than what he's done so far this year. And as far as like the players that we have now, like as far as if I think we can get the cup with them, like to me, the still the biggest glaring weakness. And I know it seems like to most people a smaller part, but I think the loss of Zach MacEwen this year to waivers when Philadelphia picked him up, I think that was a lot bigger in the lineup than we may even think of. Like right now, arguably probably the toughest guy skating around on the Canucks is Tyler Myers. All right. Which right now plays top four pairing minutes. He's not somebody that we can afford to lose. Like having a guy with a bit of meat and a bit of muscle in that bottom six, like, I don't think it can be overstated because, I mean, that guy, like, let's say the game is flat or, you know, the team is flat. You need somebody to go out there, create a spark, create check something.
Some knocks.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, rather than having one of our top four D-men out of the game for 5 minutes and screwing up line combinations, screwing up everything as far as team chemistry goes, you know, you throw that bit of meat out there and he mixes it up, creates a bit of energy. And I loved Zach MacEwen. I mean, I was actually talking to a buddy today, but like, when was the last time the Canucks even had a fighting major? Like, you know, the last one that I can think of was MacEwen days before he got picked up, and it was against Zach Cassian of the Oilers. Mm. Like, we just, to me, that's the biggest thing that we're missing. I agree. If we could beef up our back end a little bit, we can, or I'd love to, but again, like we had talked about at the beginning of the year and with Bruce Boudreau now as the coach, I think that we're going to be able to outscore a lot of our problems, especially if Demko is playing at the top of his game like he has pretty much all year apart from the odd game. I think we need some meat, wow, somebody who's a little bit
take.
Well, yeah, I think those guys are, you know, often overlooked nowadays, but you need somebody who's got a bit of size, who's willing to throw some punches, and you know, where it can just energize a team. You need that kind of guy. And we don't have anybody with that kind of size, like Chias or Alex Chias, Chiasen, whatever. He's Chiasen. Bigger. Chiasen. That's it. Thank you. He's bigger, but you know, he's not going to throw him. And Myers, you know, he can throw him, but you don't want to lose a top four D man for 5 minutes every time you need a little bit of an injection of energy. So I don't know, to me, that would be the biggest target. It doesn't shake up much in the way of the lineup. I still think that we have an extremely potential top nine as far as goal scoring goes and offensive punch. But to me, that's what I would be targeting. And it's a cheap fix. You know, I mean, even with Philly floundering right now, we could go offer Philadelphia future considerations to get McEwen back. You know, this is just off the top of my head, but something like that, or a seventh round pick or something, just to throw in a little bit more weight into the lineup, a bit more size, and somebody who's going to be able to, you know, take that role on the team.
It'll be interesting to see if any of that happens, because I agree with you completely. We definitely need that. I would prioritize defense first, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But we do need that as well. And it'll be interesting to me to see if any of that does happen before we get a bona fide general manager. Because Stan said, you know, he's like, I don't want to sit down and watch. I want to be an active part of this team. But I don't think he wants to be the long-term solution either.
Right. Yeah.
My take on the management team, I guess, is obviously I think it's going to work out a little bit better. It's obviously a temporary fix and it's a band-aid until they find out what's going on. But I think we already have our next GM in our group, and I think it's Ryan Johnson or Johansson.
Johnson.
Yeah, Ryan Johnson. He's the GM of the Abbotsford team. And honestly, he's kind of looking like he might be able to step into that role. He's taking some type of section. What they're doing is they're kind of dividing each, like taking that role and having people do a certain section of it, right? So a certain section of the pie. So if a lawyer doing business, you know what I mean? Like, the dean's probably working on one section. It's like it's going to be a bunch of people trying to fight over each other. I think they're just going to divide it up and kind of have it, and then the GM will try to oversee it, right? I that's my bold take, is that, you know, Ryan Johnson will end up being the full-time GM of the Canucks.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it's kind of like, do I want someone with no experience? Kind of like my take on the coach, right? I was so stoked. I know, Zach, you said, oh no, we hired Boudreau in the chat group. Didn't you say that? When we hired Boudreau, you said, oh no?
I don't think so. Well, maybe I did. I don't know. But I'm fine with Boudreau. I, you know, he wasn't going to be my top pick, but I'm perfectly fine with it. I was never.
You just didn't. Boudreau. You just didn't want me being right again.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. That was it. But I don't have anything against him. I think it's obviously it's you know, it's showing the value right now. But I'm happy with it.
No, that just crossed my mind. But my point was, is that I really wanted a general manager a coach with experience.
And I echoed that too. Yeah.
Yeah, you did as well, right? I think we all did.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of in the same boat with a general manager. Although I did hear rumors of he's an agent. What's his name? Petey's and Hughes agent.
You're gonna make me hit the Google machine again.
Yeah. I heard rumors of him potentially being up for the job as well, and Bergevin as well.
I think his agent is JP Barry. I hadn't heard that name thrown around, but I did hear, who did I hear? Well, I'd heard Bergevin. I can't see that.
I hope not Bergevin. I really do.
I'm the same. I'm the same.
I'm a hard no with him.
Yeah. I think the other person I had heard was Lawrence Gilman, who I believe is with the Leafs right now as an assistant GM. So anyway, I think those were the two names that I had heard, but yeah, what do I know?
Yeah, I'm trying to find the name here. But anyways, they were saying that, you know, more often in the NHL now, agents are becoming general managers. Mm-hmm. Which is not it's not a new trend.
It makes sense. I mean, when it comes to contract negotiations, that makes a ton of sense to me. Same with just managing cap, knowing how, like, you know, the contract structures will go. To me, like, it makes a lot of sense. If I remember correctly, wasn't Gillis an agent? I know for sure he was a lawyer, but wasn't Gillis an agent pre-GM job?
Agent or scout?
I don't know. I know that he was a lawyer. Maybe he was. I know that he's also had a background in law, but
There's also rumors of him coming back to town as well.
Yeah, I heard that. I hope not. I hope that's just...
You know what?
Didn't he put together the 2011 team?
Yeah, he did. I liked him only because, like, I don't know if you remember back to that team, and I don't want to go too far down memory lane, but I mean, he had introduced a lot of new concepts to the NHL, from like sleep schedules to different, you know, to the all these different travel patterns that he, because the Canucks faced a different travel schedule than teams at East. I mean, we still do, right, being out West, but he had introduced an entirely new concept to it regarding especially the sleep schedules. I thought he was a pretty good hockey mind. Like, you know, I wouldn't be against it, but again, I haven't really heard his name thrown around too much. But I also want to just touch back on another point that we had talked about. So as far as the Canucks' average age, it's 27.35 years old. So that's good for 15th oldest in the league. So, you know, right middle of the run, we're kind of right in the average. The oldest team in the league is the Dallas Stars at 29.09 years on average, and the youngest is the New Jersey Devils at 25.04. So, you know, between 29 and 25, and then we're right at 27.3. So we're kind of right in the middle on the league average, but I do know what you're saying, Steve, with having a lot of younger guys in the lineup as well. But yeah, I just figured I'd add that in there because I had it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
we have older guys like, you know, Brandon Sutter and stuff that kind of bring that up.
Yeah.
But those guys are, we can fill those roles with, like you say, maybe a bigger checking style type guy. Basically, Sutter just kills penalties for us. Well, when he plays.
When he plays, where's that guy?
Exactly, right?
So. Still probably hanging out in Granville Island.
I was gonna say, you see him at Granville Island anytime recently?
Yeah. Bron calls him up. They go out for dinner every weekend.
Me and Brandon Sutter. He's my insider.
Yeah, this is insane.
Yeah. What else? Do you guys have any other topics on this? Like, I mean,
do you think Green goes to Philly?
Philadelphia?
No.
Do you think Green gets a job within the next 5 years?
I think so. As an assistant or as a
head coach,
AHL team.
I mean, as a head coach, you think he gets a head coach job?
I think he's
5 years.
I think he's going to go back down to the AHL if he wants a head coaching job. I think so. He had success with the Utica Comets and with Vancouver's farm team. So I can't see him getting another swing at a head coaching job, at least not in the next 5 years in the NHL. I agree. I think he'll come back as either an assistant, which I think is very probable in the NHL, or take a head coaching job in the AHL.
I agree with you, Zach.
Yeah, that's my guess. But it just because, I mean, what kind of a resume does he have over the last 5 years, right? Like, we had the one decent run in the bubble that was a little bit lucky. So I wouldn't say so. I mean, you look at a guy like who comes to mind, Dallas Eakins, who's now coaching in Anaheim, but got his first start in the NHL with the Oilers, who were just terrible. And, you know, it took him a while to get to work his way back to an NHL head coach. And, you know, and he was very highly touted coming out of the AHL. So I think the same thing with Green. I mean, I remember when Vancouver hired him for the big leagues. He was being sought after by a bunch of teams at that point, but, you know, he's significantly lowered his stock. So I can't see him getting a head coaching job in the NHL in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. I disagree. I'll see it happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you guys want to put some money on it?
You've been pretty hot this year, so I'm not going to bet against you, but I don't think so. I hope so though. I mean, I hope all the best for him, but
I will hate him. I just don't. I agree with Zach in the sense that I don't think he has anything a leg to stand on now.
I feel awful for him. You know, it must have been a dream coming to coach here. He wasn't given the team that he should have had. He was dragged across the coals, like basically embarrassed in public. You know, like everyone, we talked about this two episodes ago, or was the last episode, but it's been over a week anyways, where we knew publicly the Vancouver were shopping coaches, and he's still standing behind the bench. Like, that's embarrassing.
It is. I mean, that's the business.
What a ruthless thing to do.
That seems like the business of, like, you know, sports, right? Like, you're making millions of bucks. You got the pressure on you. I mean, I do feel bad for him too, but Yeah, it's ruthless. It's a ruthless business.
But to say he doesn't have the team, I mean, so what happens if Bujo takes his team, all of a sudden we make playoffs?
That's
a serious question, right? So to say, you know, was it the team or was it Green?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's obviously it's only time would tell, but it'd be pretty hilarious if we slip into the like seventh or eighth spot.
If we can slip in, that will be incredible. And that would, you know what? Like, it's funny. I mean, there's always one team like that every year that kind of rips their way through the league in the second half just to make it in, like kind of by the skin of their teeth. And those are always the scariest teams to look out for because, you know, they've cranked it up as the season went on. And obviously we're getting way ahead of ourselves talking about this, but if they can, I would look out because it means they're going to have to be playing at the top of the level of their game for a long time just in order to get there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take it week by week. I want to win the week. I want to win the week. I'm happy if we win the week.
You know, I'm with you.
If we got three games this week and we win two of them, thumbs up. What were you gonna say, Zach? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm Googling through different stats and stuff. I was looking at standings, but then I got caught by an ad because, you know, I've got ADD here. But have you guys listened to the, this is a totally unsolicited plug for The Score has a podcast called When Goalies Were Weird. Have you listened to this?
No.
Steve, you'll love it personally. Like they obviously don't have an episode on that fucking plug Brodeur, but they've got an episode on Hasek, Waugh, and now Hextall out. And it's basically all about like 90s, late 90s to early 2000s era goalies. And because they were weird at that point, right? That was a transition in the NHL and in the style of the goaltending position in general. And obviously Brodeur will be involved in this series. I think it's going to be six or seven guys in it. But anyway, I listened to the Hasek and Waugh episodes the other day at work, and it's fascinating to anybody who thinks or who is interested in that kind of thing and the quirks. It's incredible.
In that sense, Waugh and Hasek were a lot more quirkier than Brodeur.
I think so too.
Like Waugh had, I haven't heard of this, but I know Waugh was really quiet. Like he didn't want to be talked to. He was really silent, get into like the zone. And Hasek was just fucking, I don't know what the hell was going through his head. It's like a fucking circus. Like I was you know, everything was like superstition. But Brodeur could sit there and talk to a news reporter up till 10 minutes before the game and put his shit on and go out and play, right? So I could see probably why they went into more in that sense. Hextall is also a fucking psycho case. Oh, sorry for swearing.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's insane.
Yeah.
I
think you'll particularly really like it though, Steve. It's pretty interesting because that's kind of the golden era of goaltending, at least in my opinion. Like when they were stylistically all different and it was kind of cool to watch them play, like you could tell the differences in the players. But that was way off topic. But you know, that's what this clickbait shit is here for, and it works.
It worked.
I agree.
It worked.
There's nothing better than 90s goaltending because
absolutely
everyone you have, you know, Belfour, Hasek, Brodeur, Waugh, all these Cujo, they all had, you know, even you can go down to like the shittier goalies with like Artis Erbe compared to like Corey Hirsch, completely different styles. They weren't mimicking each other. They didn't have the YouTube to kind of copy each other, right? So it was all growing up and figure out their own shit with their own body style. And it was just great. I feel like it's a lot of nowadays, there's not so much creativity with it. You know, with the maybe stacking pads and rolling the legs over the huge, you know, grabbing the puck and throwing your own net like Waugh does.
I know. The Statue of Liberty right in there.
Yeah.
But they go over that.
Everything seems to be more, a little bit more cookie cutter with goaltending these days, right? It's a lot of, you know, cutting down angles, very good positioning.
Totally. But, more about blocking than saving at this point.
Exactly where you all put your rebounds. You know, back in the day, the guy, especially Hasek, was flopping, right? He had rebound control, but it was a weird type of rebound control, right? He didn't put it like where he could put exactly in the boards, but he put it in positions where he knew he had the ability to make a save.
Totally.
You guys should make a podcast. Just call it Goalies Are Weird.
I was gonna say literally, Andrew. Like we could have a goalie themed podcast, just or a goalie themed episode, like once a month, and
I could bro, I'll just sit in the corner 5 minutes.
I'll just sit in the corner and just talk every once in a while.
I'll just do the intro and the outro.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. That's goaltender of the week.
I am looking at the schedule, or sorry, not the schedule, the standings right now. So I don't know if this is updated as of tonight, but the Canucks, 27 games played, 10 wins, 15 losses, 2 overtime losses for a total of 22 points. You know, like obviously it's looking, it's tough, right? Like there's no way to just to say that they've got a clear cut to the playoffs. They don't. Oh, right now they're sitting. I'm just saying, I like looking at it. So right now they're 7 points out with Nashville holding 2 games in hand. But, you know, like if they were to go on a run, they would really have to go on a run for months on end. But yeah. I do think they have that to win like
28 games or something.
Yeah, at least I'd say probably around 31 games of the last, what is that, 52, 31 out of 52. So it'd be a steep task, obviously, but you know, there's some runway there. And, you know, as Canuck fans, we're cursed with never ending hope. So, we'll see. I'm happy that they got it done, and it gives that little injection of hope and excitement back into the season.
Yeah. As long as the Kraken doesn't make it.
I totally agree with you. We have to finish above fucking Seattle.
That's my only hope. That's the only thing. Well, I hope. That's the only thing I want from the season. I'll be happy. Don't lose. God damn, if we lose to the Kraken.
Oh, I hate the Kraken already.
Oh, man.
That rivalry really worked.
Yeah, it works for Twitter. Me, that's for sure. Man,
it's a damn Twitter account.
Man, you walked around Vancouver in the past like month and you'd see like just as much Kraken stuff as Canuck stuff, because there's so many bandies here in the city that like the second that the Canucks start sucking, it's like, oh, on to the next team. And oh yeah, Seattle's a hot new talking point. So I saw Seattle stuff around like Chilliwack here out in the valley, and I wanted to run him over, but you know, I didn't, but I could not believe it. Yeah, that's crazy.
Their jerseys are cool though. I'll give them that.
They're nice jerseys. I like the logo. The logo is so oversized on the jersey, though.
I agree.
It's the biggest logo I've ever seen. It takes up 75% of every player's chest.
This color scheme is pretty cool, though.
I agree. I like the jersey. I like the color scheme, but I don't like Seattle.
Fair. Fair. All right, boys.
Do we have anything else to quickly close with, or
I don't think so. I think that's it. Let's go, Bruce. Fuck Seattle. Yeah. Podcast.
Right on.
It's been a great week. I can't wait for the upcoming games, which I have right in front of me. If I can pull it up, Zach, you probably beat me to it with your little Google there.
Oh, sorry. No, I've got F1 news in front of me right now. Oh, so
you've hopped over. It's over.
Well, yeah. Like when the Canucks are going through that skid, I just like to say that I'm an F1 fan now and I don't pay attention to the NHL because
you're back to the Canucks fan now.
I'm back to the Canucks. Yeah. I'm back to the Canucks.
Has he just still talked Red Bull shit about bad wagon jumping fans?
Oh yeah.
Those I can't wear Seattle Kraken. Oh, as soon as we suck, he jumped to F1.
Well, hey.
Oh, we're back. Oh, shit, I'm back on TV. You're just as bad as the people you just talk shit about.
I am just as bad, but I'll never jump to another hockey team here. I'm sticking with the Canucks here, but it is cheating. Yeah, I had to get entertainment somehow. You're right. You called me on it. You're right. Oh, no.
Right, so we got the Jets on Friday, 7 p.m. We got the Hurricanes, which will be a tough one.
Oh, yeah.
On Sunday. It's in a 7 o'clock start as well. These are all home games. We're on a home stretch here. And then Tuesday versus Columbus.
Big games against the Jets, then.
We'll talk Monday. So, yeah.
The Jets game's going to be big. If we can win that, put three straight in. I mean, Carolina, I think it's kind of a write-off.
It'll be a good game to watch. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to lose one, it's going to be against them, in my opinion. And then Columbus is obviously a team that we could beat.
Mm-hmm.
So
we could beat Columbus. You know, there's no easy games really. Well, very few easy games anymore. You know, Columbus is just stingy.
I don't know. I'm with you though. The Friday game against Winnipeg is going to be huge. Sunday against Carolina is going to be tough. But I mean, think about it. Right now on our homestand, we're 2-1. You know, obviously 2-0 since Brucey took over. But you know, if we end this homestand 4-2, like that's essentially the point percentage that we're going to have to go at the rest of this year is, you know, basically 2 out of 3, right? So, yeah. Yeah.
I know you say that there's no easy games, but at the end of the month is looking decent anyways. So we've got the Columbus game, then we've got the Sharks, and then the Leafs, which will be a tough one. there you go, Zach, and it's a 4 o'clock start in Vancouver.
Dog shit. That's why everybody hates Leafs fans. That right there is why. You know what? That's a home game. It should be 7 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah. And then after that, we've got 19, 21, 23, 27, 29, 30. Coyotes, Sharks, Ducks, Kraken, Ducks, Kings. So bit of a California trip with a stop in Arizona and Seattle.
Well, we can't. It's hard to have easy games when we are the easy game.
Yeah,
that's shut true. Your mouth, Steve. That is the true. Old Vancouver Canucks. That is not Bruce Boudreau's Vancouver Canucks.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
You're not wrong.
I'm hoping things are turned around.
I'm Team Bruce. This is the most excited I've been. I must say. Like,
hey, wow! Listen to that, Zach.
I'm excited. I'm happy for you, Steve.
Yeah, this is a fucking bandwagoner. What are you talking about, man? I just don't have my head up my own ass. That's all the Cucks are a win this year. Like every other year, buddy.
I've been saying that since I was 6 when I started following the Canucks.
Yeah. I did right, too. Boys. I stopped last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to wrap this up here. It's getting late. And
there it is.
Yeah, so thank you for joining us. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. I hope you enjoyed. Steve's yawning. He's tapping out. You look like a zombie, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I'm really trying to bring the energy for this episode, you guys. But just so you know, I will be wearing a shirt next week. So this is going to be the last episode you see me shirtless for a while.
Until you lose another bet.
Yes, that's true. Until I lose another bet, then I will go shirtless again. Yeah. But
So for all you listeners only, check out the YouTube channel. You want to see Zach's beach. It looks pretty nice. And
YouTube, don't demonetize us for his hard nipples.
I've actually made a point of not putting my nipples on camera at all.
That's bullshit.
You know it's true. No.
I've seen your hairs icing them. When I got right on this group chat before he's recording, he's coming on with ice and rubbing his tits. So
underneath the camera.
Can you tell you whatever he says? Camera. He's lying. He's lying.
Oh, on that Thanks. Note. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram. On your favorite podcast streaming service, YouTube, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, we're everywhere. So hit us up, smash that follow button so you know every time a new episode drops, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
See ya.
Dude, this is the...
I made a deal.
I'm
nothing if a man of my word. We got a lot of views on that last episode.
Oh, I can't.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, we also got some comments, too.
Fucking crying.
Did we really? I never... Oh, yeah, we did get comments.
Yeah, that's why I called you a lazy bastard or whatever in your birthday post. Because the guy's like, you're laying on your couch.
Right.
Yeah.
So this, you know, is your bed.
This guy obviously doesn't fucking watch Chicklets. Biz lives on his couch.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the beach tonight, guys. Relax.
Holy fuck.
Dude,
I'm so gonna do it.
For Ferdy was Fabio the whole night.
I'll take it.
So good.
I'm fine like this.
I love it.
Yeah. No, I think so. I agree with that, I guess, too. like, I don't know what to say here. Like, shit. I'm drawing blank.
I'm distracting. I can put a shirt on if you like.
No, it's all good.
Steve, wake up.
Sorry, guys. It's been out of
I know.
I've been tired, so.
Yeah, it's a long day. It is late here tonight, but we wanted to get this recording in.
Yeah, no, I
yeah, because it's such a huge episode.
Yeah, it is a huge episode for sure.
Yeah.
No, I was in a car accident actually about a week ago.
Oh, really?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I have a cracked rib.
Ooh.
From a car accident? You said that so casually in our chat group. I thought you were talking about a fight, like.
Yeah, when you say cracked rib, I had no idea that it was from a car accident.
I thought it was
either.
From exploring or something.
No, no, that was from a car accident.
Jeez. Oh my god. Well, you're all right?
Yeah, yeah, I was just sore. So I haven't been like sleeping too much. Kind of out of it, but yeah, not too bad. I got some painkillers, so.
Oh, that's why you look like a zombie.
Yeah.
That explains it. Right on.
Yeah, that's definitely has definitely effect on that. So my train of thought's kind of all over the place right now.
Still good.
All right.